The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost effective, Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.
New signs of a slowing U.S. labor market as more Americans stay in their jobs. Plus, Facebook parent Meta takes aim at Twitter. And despite falling inflows, the U.S. remains number one in foreign direct investment.
If you get to a certain size as a company in any other country around the globe, you have to start thinking about what you're going to do in the U.S. It's a place that you really can't afford to ignore.
It's Thursday, July 6th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. And here is the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. We begin with an epic battle between Meta and Twitter, which kicked off overnight. Facebook parent Meta Platforms has launched Threads, a standalone microblogging app that takes direct aim at Twitter. Threads has rolled out to users around the world, and according to a Threads post by Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg, the app has gained 10 million signups in its first 7 hours after release. My colleague Zoe Thomas from our Tech News Briefing podcast spoke to Journal reporter Salvador Rodriguez about the launch and what this all means for Twitter.
Meta is launching Threads because it's a good opportunity to release a product like this. Twitter has had a number of issues since Elon Musk took ownership of that social network in October. And for Meta, it's a way to give users more stuff to do. It's a way to keep them around longer in the Meta social media empire, and eventually it would be one more way for them to show advertisements to people.
So what does this mean for Twitter? What are the potential big impacts of having a player like Meta enter this space?
I spoke with a bunch of social media experts, including some folks who had previously worked at both Twitter and Meta. I also spoke with some social media analysts, and none of them think that this means Twitter will die overnight. Like, we're not going to see everybody leave this bar to go to the other bar. That's not going to happen. But what is going to happen is that over time, anytime an issue comes up or anytime Elon says something that offends a subset of people, every Twitter user will now have a real alternative that they can go to instead.
What do you mean by real alternative? Because there have been other competitors, Blue Sky, Spill, these other apps that have come up that have tried to compete with Twitter already.
Yeah, there certainly have been others, Mastodon, Blue Sky, Truth Social. Even though they exist, the problem that they have is this. They don't have mass adoption. They haven't seen a network effect, right? From the estimates that I've seen, the three apps that I mentioned are all less than 1 million active users. Twitter is at about 350 million monthly active users based on estimates that we've seen. We know that Instagram has more than 2 billion monthly active users. Now, if you get just a quarter of Instagram users to sign up for this thing, it's already larger than Twitter. And at the end of the day, an app like this, it's about broadcasting whatever you have to say to as many people as possible, right? It's a one-to-many broadcast channel. And if the main point of you using this is to be as loud as you can be, you're going to go to whichever of these apps has the most users. I think that will ultimately be the deciding factor.
That was WSJ social media reporter Salvador Rodriguez speaking to my colleague Zoe Thomas. And you can hear much more from that interview on today's Tech News Briefing podcast. Americans have quitting their jobs, at least at the rate that we saw during the pandemic. New Labor Department figures are due out this morning revealing how many Americans voluntarily left their jobs in May. And our markets editor Matthew Thomas told me that gauging from previous numbers for April, the U.S. labor market is likely to show further signs of softening.
3.8 million Americans quit their jobs in April. Now, that sounds like a lot, but it's well down from the 4.5 million who left in November 2021, which was a record number. So we can certainly say that the numbers are going in the right direction if you're worried about a tight labor market. The big question going into today is, will that trend continue? Are we going to keep going lower?
And Matthew, if we do see that, a further slowdown in voluntary departures, what would that mean in the current context?
So if you're worried about interest rates, that would be good news. You want fewer people to quit their jobs because that means there's going to be less pressure on wages. Obviously, if it's harder to hire people, if they're more willing to walk away, you need to pay them more to keep them. And wage price inflation is a big driver of inflation generally. And we know from the Fed's minutes that were released yesterday that they are still considering a couple more interest rate increases before they finish for good.
The latest quits rate for May will be released at 10 a.m. Eastern. And that concern about rising interest rates that Matthew flagged is also having an impact on the property market. With millions of Americans who are locked into mortgage rates below 4% unwilling to relocate, building a new home is now the main option for many aspiring homeowners. The number of housing starts jumped 22% in May, according to the Census Bureau, as builders got to work on 1.6 million new homes. Our commodities reporter Ryan Dezember said that made stocks of lumber producers, including Weyerhaeuser, Louisiana-Pacific, and Boise Cascade, among the best-performing assets on Wall Street over the course of June. And analysts think they could have more room to run, especially with lumber futures up 15% since April.
We had a lot of European exports coming into the country that were depressing prices for domestic wood. Those have been coming in lower lately. You also have the fires in Canada, which are causing disruptions to the supply chain, to logging and mills. And then when prices for lumber were lower last autumn and into the winter, that prompted a lot of the Canadian mills in British Columbia, which sort of need the highest lumber prices to be profitable. A lot of them closed down. And sort of the fall off in production from those is starting to find its way into the supply chain and to affect prices on a delay.
And U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen is set to arrive in Beijing today, a visit that comes amid simmering bilateral tensions. Yellen is expected to hold talks with senior Chinese officials in a bid to repair ties between the two economies, though it isn't clear whether she will get to meet leader Xi Jinping. Coming up, global overseas business investment tumbled more than 10% last year as companies coped with rising uncertainty and high borrowing costs. But there are winners in the hunt for foreign direct investment. We've got that story and more after the break.
This episode is brought to you by Charles Schwab. Decisions made in Washington can affect your portfolio every day. But what policy changes should investors be watching? Washington Wise is an original podcast for investors from Charles Schwab that unpacks the stories making news in Washington and how they may affect your finances and portfolio. Listen at schwab.com/WashingtonWise.
Global foreign direct investment, or FDI, fell by a full 12% last year, according to new data from the United Nations. And yet, the $1.3 trillion in overseas business investments last year still created plenty of investment opportunity for certain countries. And the journal's Paul Hannon is here now to break down who is succeeding in steering investment in their direction. Paul, tell us who's number one in the FDI rankings.
Well, Luke, it's the U.S. that's holding on to that spot for many years now. It's perhaps not surprising because it's the biggest economy in the world. It has the biggest consumer market. And if you get to a certain size as a company in any other country around the globe, you have to start thinking about what you're going to do in the U.S. It's a place that you really can't afford to ignore. So it's number one, despite having seen a smallish fall in foreign investment, mainly through mergers and acquisitions. That's a foreign business taking over a US business. And that's perhaps not surprising given the massive uncertainty that we saw last year, and not least because people were unsure where inflation was going and where the Fed's interest rates were going to be going as a result.
Just what is keeping the US at the top of the rankings and may continue to keep them in that position?
The fall last year came after a very big rise the previous year. So, you know, you're not seeing this kind of drop off in interest in the US. And these figures are very subject to the announcement of really big deals. If one really big company takes over another really big company, you get like $100 billion out of that. And it can change the whole picture of what's happening. The US is still a really appealing place for businesses to operate in and may become even more appealing in the future. These data do not yet reflect the impact of the Inflation Reduction Act, which offers subsidies for renewable energy projects and technologies that rely on lower carbon use. And that is expected to make the US even more appealing in the years to come.
Overall, though, Paul, FDI is down on the year. In fact, it was the worst year for foreign direct investments since 2009, with the exception of the first pandemic year, 2020. Why are we seeing this drop?
We're seeing it because there are a whole array of shocks and uncertainties facing businesses. You know, the UN used the term polycrisis, which became kind of popular last year. On top of the lingering effects of the pandemic, we have Russia's invasion of Ukraine. You have rising interest rates pretty much everywhere to combat inflation that appears to be pretty stubborn. There are various climate incidents that people think they need to address, and new requirements in the way that they run their businesses to make sure that they are doing that. So it's a pretty dynamic, turbulent sort of environment. And investments are long-term decisions. So the more you think you know about the future, the more you're probably going to be willing to invest. And last year, you probably didn't think you knew all that much.
Considering those forces, which seem to be fueling a decline in foreign direct investment overall, I guess I'm surprised to see China registering its highest ever inflow of foreign direct investment, $189 billion last year. How did China manage that?
Well, it's a pretty notable achievement, given that China, in addition to all the other issues we were talking about, was wrestling with this idea of whether it abandoned the zero COVID policy, which was still leading to lockdowns that were disrupting supply chains in the country. But what you have to remember is that China is the second biggest economy on the planet. And increasingly, the kind of investment it attracts is the kind of investment that the US has been attracting for a long time. So it's not like I'm investing in China to make things that are then sold to some other country, maybe even the US. You're now investing in China because you want to sell things to Chinese people. And a lot of the investment going into China is actually coming from Europe. And a typical example would be a German car manufacturer increasing its stake in a joint venture with a local Chinese car manufacturer with the aim of selling cars to Chinese customers.
Finally, Paul, you say there could be some tailwinds at the back of FDI bound for the US. China is coming off a record year. Should we then assume the overall FDI outlook globally is equally rosy?
No, I don't think you can. I mean, the UN is being cautious, but it did say that on the basis of what it is seeing in the early months of 2023, that, you know, businesses remain very cautious, risk averse, for reasons that we've discussed. And the world has not suddenly become a much more certain place just because we've ticked over from 2022 to 2023. And I think they'd be surprised if they saw a very strong rebound. So it looks like another weak year.
That was the Journal's Paul Hannon. Paul, thank you, as always.
Thanks, Luke.
Yesterday, we reported that the world hit a new heat record on Monday, and it took just 24 hours for that record to be broken by a new high. The global average atmospheric temperature reached a new record of 62.9 degrees Fahrenheit on July 4th, according to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and the University of Maine. This comes as the Copernicus Climate Change Service confirmed that June 2023 was the hottest June ever recorded, adding that this was the result of long-term industrial emissions of greenhouse gases, along with a strong El Niño weather pattern in the Pacific Ocean. And that extreme weather is something that is affecting America's aging power grid. Journal reporter Jennifer Hiller says that's prompted U.S. utility companies to sell off their wind and solar farms and make record investments into power infrastructure instead.
It's 100 years old or plus in a lot of areas. And there's a lot of upgrades that need to be made just to the basic wires and poles and transmission lines. A lot of modernization needs to happen. And so that is the core business of utility companies. And it's just a better investment for them, essentially. There's a lot of companies that are developing renewable energy assets. And so it can be a good time for the utilities to sell and get out of that more competitive market. And the other thing that they are dealing a lot with is more extreme weather. So there's a lot of extreme weather events and damage that we've had to the system. And so some of the upgrades that they're doing are just to try to make things more resilient.
Iran has attempted to seize two oil tankers near the Strait of Hormuz, firing shots at one of them, according to the U.S. Navy. It is the latest in a series of attacks on tankers in the waterway, which has strategic importance given its access to the Persian Gulf and through which more than a third of the world's seaborne crude oil transits. A spokesman for the Iranian delegation at the United Nations didn't return a request for comment. And surveillance footage from former President Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago resort shows his personal aide, Walt Nauta, moving dozens of boxes in the days before Justice Department investigators visited the property in June 2022 in order to retrieve records. That's according to newly unredacted portions of the FBI request for a warrant to search the property. Nauta is set to appear in federal court today for an arraignment hearing where he's expected to plead not guilty to charges that he conspired with Trump to retain sensitive government documents and lied to federal investigators in a voluntary interview. Trump pleaded not guilty to all charges last month. And that's What's News for Thursday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
ServiceNow is the intelligent platform that puts AI to work for people across every corner of your business, all in a single platform you can use right now. That's why the world works with ServiceNow.